Hi, and welcome to Embark. I'm Liz Solar, and joining me in the studio today is Michael Coleman. Michael has received the Edward R. Murrow Award, Marconi, Associated Press, and Silver Microphone Awards, among others, for sound and messaging. Their company, Colcuts Creative Messaging, has a passion for creating the spirit of audio and video with the intoxicating sound of language, creative imagery, or humor. A stand-up comedian for 27 years, Michael's two CDs, Do Not Read This, and Laughing to Beat the Band, have received critical acclaim from radio stations around the country. They've also taught creative writing and sound production at Northeastern University and Boston College. They are a self-proclaimed audio optometrist, and I want to hear more about that. They also wrote a book, and we'll talk about that right after I introduce you to Michael Coleman. Hello, friend.
Hello, friend. How are you?
Good. Good to see you. Can I call you Mikey?
Yes, you may. As long as it's not a swear word before that.
Never. You know that. So you wrote a book called The Advantage. Very clever. A communications guidebook for business owners. Okay.
It's also, the subtitle of that is Creating a Better Message in a Message.
Ooh. That's an indictment, isn't it?
Yes. And that's pretty much the reason why I didn't really want to write this book. I felt the need to write it.
So you were compelled to write yet another book about advertising and messaging. So that probably indicates a void someplace. So what did you think was missing?
Well, when people do ads, think about immediately right now, I want the listeners of this podcast to think you have a business or just you want to sell yourself. You're going to start writing. Where your mind goes immediately is towards your accomplishments, all of your accolades. And you're pretty much writing a resume. And that's what most ads are. Look at me, buy from me, come to me, look what I do. And I equate that sometimes with a blind date. Think about right now that we're on a date. Technically, we are right now anyways. I mean, we're having a conversation. And that's what this is. So we're sitting at a table. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself, Michael. And that's usually where it starts. That's where an ad is based around. Tell me a little bit about your company. Well, I do this and I do this and we won this. Look, when you introduce me, he's won these awards. He's done this and it's your badge of honor. It's a resume.
But it's okay for me to say that, right?
Yeah, believe me, I don't mind. It was a long one, so thank you.
You're welcome.
But is that the way you want to present yourself? Hi, my name's Liz Solar. I've done this, I've done that. And if I did that with you, I won the Nobel Peace Prize twice, the Congressional Medal of Honor, and it's great. Wow. But is that really who I am? That's just what I do.
So rather than be that person who is always putting out there, hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, what is the alternative to talking up your accolades, your accomplishments, and your benefits?
Well, people, they're not narcissistic, but my life centers around me because it's my life. And is that being selfish? No, people are people. People's lives focus around themselves. So if I'm going to do an ad about me, the focus really should be about the recipient, the listener, the viewer, the reader. It's like, why am I going to do business with you, Michael? What am I going to get out of that? And that's where the problem lies. It's all about the listener, the viewer, the reader. If I'm going to pick up a story and just read about somebody else where I cannot connect with them, I'm done. I'm gone. And there's a lack of communication in today's, well, not just today's, but it's in the history of advertising. I'd say about 85% of ads out there are just bloviating about their accomplishments. It's me, 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 I, look at me. Let's say we go to a high school reunion. You meet people, think about the questions, think about the conversation. How have you been? Well, you know, I'm married, I have children, I have this and that, and I've done this and that. Well, tell me about you. Okay, well, and then you get beyond the accomplishment stage. But at some point in the conversation, there needs to be a connection, a real connection, a soul connection. Otherwise, there's disconnect. Well, it was nice meeting you. Take care. Goodbye.
So really, you know, a lot of what you're saying, and I've heard this in so many discussions lately with my peers, particularly small business owners, and they say exactly the same thing, Michael, that rather than talk about yourself, the person, especially if it's a prospective client or customer, they want to know what is in it for them and what can you offer them. And doing it in a way that they can relate to, and so that they, you know, what is it, know, like, and trust you. So then they feel comfortable in investing with you.
This is all about trust. When we meet anyone on the street, if we see someone walking up in another direction and they look intimidating, now this goes way beyond any type of physical profiling. This is about dealing with the unknown. Human beings make choices based on two things, either fear or love. And we do things out of love when we pour our heart open, we can listen better, we're more accepting. But when we do things out of fear, we're closed off. We're ready to fight back and we don't want to listen to anything. Now, I'm not saying that we're fearful of advertising, but that falls into the line of trust.
Well, what is it? Advertising is, what is it? It's the art of having somebody want something that they didn't even know they needed.
Very good.
Right? So you were talking about trust, and you have a chapter in your book about avoiding truth decay. I'm intrigued. Tell me about that.
When I was, I tell a story in the book, when I was, maybe 5 or 6, I saw an ad on Saturday morning cartoons for the G.I. Joe Rat Patrol Jeep. And this was, God had created this work of art descended from the heavens for me alone. I saw this ad, I was zeroed in. G.I. Joe Rat Patrol Jeep with machine gun turret, climb action traction, and battle action figures.
Whoa, you were indoctrinated.
I was sold. And not for one. I wanted to buy one for the entire community of kids my age so we could just have our own army. But as the ad is playing, my father walks into the room. And his reaction was classic dad, was piece of plastic junk.
Takes all the beauty
out of it. Oh, my heart just sunk.
It takes all the mystery.
I guess I'm not going to get that one. Well, I'm going to have to write to Santa. And sure enough, Christmas morning, I got the G.I. Joe Rat Patrol Jeep. There it was. And about, I'd say, I don't know, maybe 48 seconds of me playing with it, the left front wheel broke off. The machine gun turret didn't even turn. The entire thing broke within 10 minutes. And his prophecy was correct. It was a piece of plastic junk. And from that early time on, I became this sort of advertising contrarian, searching for the truth in commercials. And think about how many ads, just commercials alone. I mean, we see anywhere from 3,500 advertisements we're subjected to on a daily basis. Now, this includes just trucks going by with their logo on the side to opening a package of Doritos. These are all advertising messages that we're subjected to every day. We're bombarded with this. And it's not just me, it's everyone else. So after a while, we're professional listeners. We're professional viewers now, whether we like it or not. The public is constantly intruded upon with someone else's message. Buy this. Look at this. Hire me. At some point, we're saying, wait a minute, I heard that line before. Oh, wait a minute, that reminds me of this ad. And this becomes one collective jumble of phrases that we hear all the time. Think about it, you know, if you're standing on the corner and people are walking by saying, look at me, buy from me, pick from me. After a while, you're going to be a little bit more discerning.
Well, walk through Times Square.
Exactly.
Everybody with their sandwich boards and passing out, you know, passes to comedy shows or something happening in the park. And it's overwhelming.
And that's what the internet is now. That's what television is. That's what radio. That's what every broadcast medium is. Think about this. When you're listening to a program, when you're watching a show, it could be an in-depth crime story or a love story, whatever. And what happens? We'll be back right after this. That's an interruption. They're taking you away from that storyline. When you're just watching a video on YouTube, you all of a sudden you see that little circle ad coming up in 3, 2, 1. That's discerning. That's an interruption in your life. Do you like that?
I think that there are many instances now where people can either blow by commercials using DVR or forego them altogether through many streaming services. You can just cut out the middleman, which is kind of a bummer if you're an advertiser. So in those programs themselves, they themselves are broadcasting or streaming a different type of message. And whatever that message is, there's a lot of mockumentaries, I will call them, you know, using the Christopher Guest language. But there are a lot of documentaries out now that are not really, but they're pushing some type of narrative that people follow, often for a very long time. I mean, if we can look back to the beginning of COVID and Tiger King, someone said he's the hero, not that we, you know, need, but the one that we deserve.
I think I watched maybe 10 minutes of that, saying, boy, are we a voyeuristic society. We just want to look at the car wreck in life.
Right. And so when so much of what you talked about is we absorb these messages unconsciously, subconsciously, they are just in our minds and they're repeated messages going on a loop in our minds so that when we see something that triggers that response, I mean, we can go back to how our previous president was elected, and it's by the repetition of that person appearing in our living rooms every day, for better or worse, until that person was elected. So it's the familiarity of that message and the repetition of it until you're almost worn down.
One thing on top of that, we slide into this submissive state that we don't even know what's happening to us. That's what can be even more dangerous. Now you look at a client or a business owner who wants to advertise and say, man, that's a lot to go up against. I want to spend all this money on something that people don't like. I don't like commercials. Who does like commercials? Because they're disruptive in our lives.
I like some. There's a lot of noise out there. You know, whether
Well, that's the key word. It's noise. If we look at it like we're meeting someone on the street, what type of person do you want to meet on the street? Do you want to meet a noisy, braggadocious boaster, or do you want to meet someone who's going to engage you in a conversation? That's really what this is about, having a conversation.
Yes. So how do we elevate that conversation so it rises above all the other noise of things that perhaps we don't really want to listen to, or we are lulled into listening to and absorbing?
Once again, that key word that you just said is truth. First of all, you have to begin with the truth. Now, I'm not saying you want to talk about that if you have a product that's going to break down at high speeds or it's going to have toxic side effects, maybe you ought to look at the product in the first place. But are you looking to deceive your potential clients out there? This isn't just your audience. What is the purpose of this whole advertisement is to really elevate your name, look at me, put a spotlight on who you are, and draw people into the fact where, wait a minute, I want to really know more about what you're selling, about what you have to offer here. And will this apply to me? If I'm selling something or you're selling something, they want to know the truth. Think about disclaimers. You know, disclaimers are really, well, we have to tell the truth about this medication right now. Because there's some serious side effects that's going to happen if you... You know, if you have pre-existing conditions and you're going to take this pill, but that's a lawyer coming in
right, to
force the truth on people. This is the society that we live in. And I am sure anyone listening has purchased something in their life where they open the box to reveal that it's not their size, it's not what they envisioned, and the wheels fall off and the machine gun turret breaks.
But we're sold to emotionally. Does that neck cream really work, and is it going to take 20 years off? Maybe not, but we live in the hope that there's going to be this magic elixir that's going to make our lives better or solve a problem.
Now, once again, this is where truth in advertising must be dominant.
We have been living in this post-truth, alternate facts type of world, and we can see it being played out right now where certain truths are not only told, but actually vetted. They've been proven to be correct or factual. And yet there's a large segment of our society that say, well, absolutely not. That's just not true. And they firmly believe in their own version of the truth. How in advertising do you get people on the same page when they don't believe in some of the fundamentals going on in their own society?
Well, you have two choices. If you want to influence human behavior, you can either manipulate it or you can inspire it. Would you rather be manipulated in life or would you rather be inspired?
I think that we would all say that we want to be inspired. You know, I think it's human nature to want to acknowledge that we're good. I believe basically we are all good, or people don't wake up in the morning saying, I'm going to be a jerk today, or I'm going to be a blowhard. I do think people come to it with the best of intentions, and somehow that gets thwarted. And I'm not sure whether it's ego. I mean, that's a whole other philosophical conversation, but I'm not sure that too many people are looking to pull the wool over our eyes. But then there's El Grito, you know, people, you know, there is the power of making money.
That's a whole nother chapter on the history of what I talk about. And I pretty much coined a phrase called communipulation, which is communication and manipulation. But there are many, these are the tactics, and there are many of them that advertising does to us.
So if you could come up with one, two, three ways to overcome that co-manipulation, how would that play out?
I'd say three words: truth, truth, and truth. Now, I'm not saying that you have to, okay, when you buy this toy, the left front wheel's going to break off and the machine gun turret's going to snap off. No. First of all, build a better product. Have a better service. Rise up to the level of what you're claiming. Because if I buy your product and it fails, I'm going to tell everyone about it. You don't even have to advertise to know that. You go to a good restaurant, you tell a few people. You go to a bad restaurant, you tell everyone. Begin with the truth. Begin with the core values of your business. Then focus on your advertising budget. Audiences are no dopes. They're smart. They've been watching. They've been listening for years. It's embedded in our DNA now. I mean, just turning on our phone and bam, an ad comes on. Ooh, I either like this or I'm going to flip past it and it's not going to be interesting to me. But if it is, now there's desire. There's intent and desire here. It's this, ooh, I really like that shirt. I want to buy that shirt. Then you buy it. And now this was emotion came into play here. You bought that shirt because it's just like walking by a window, a store window. You either want something or it has to be, you know, kind of either not pushed on you, but shown to you. Here, look at this, and directed towards you. And that's what an ad does. I mean, especially a commercial, a video and an audio commercial, that's intrusive media, comes at you out of nowhere. Hi, how are you? You interested in buying something like this? When you look at something, when you walk by, you see it in a storefront or in a magazine or an ad on the side of an internet article. You just see that. Ooh, that's interesting. Now your attention is drawn to that. It was just there, placed as a billboard on the side of the road. It's up to you whether or not you're going to continue to read it. But when I talk about these intrusive ads, this is what people, I don't like to be interrupted, especially when I'm listening to a story. A good documentary or a good movie, a news broadcast or something that, whoa, I'm really, we'll be right back after this. Whoa, wait a minute. Now I'm not going to wait for 30 seconds or a minute. These breaks are, what, 3-4 minutes long?
And yet, both of us come from a broadcasting lineage, and that's really how we got paid. We're on the programming side. We would present programming for listeners. And then there's the sales aspect where they sell advertising so that we can do our job. And hopefully we are providing programming worthy of being sold. So there's that contract between the art and commerce of any type of messaging. And, you know, I know that you have an incredible love of sound.
I do.
Having worked in radio and being a creative director, you describe what you do as audio optometry. Therefore, reason would tell us that you must be an audio optometrist. So what does that mean, and how did you come up with that name?
Well, first of all, the reason I see sound. Sound is visual. Someone said to me a long time ago, you will always make it in this industry, in the audio industry, if you know how to sound tall. Now think about what that, meaning that you have to sound like you smell good. Present an image, because when people, they don't know what we look like right now. They want to present, what does this person who's talking look like? And think of it, I'm sure you've done that with from radio DJs to people in advertisements. And at some point, you might hear that deep, dulcet voice. Or you hear that, you know, that sexy type of velvet voice. And it should be alluring to some people. That's why these people were hired in the first place. Go back to your youth. I always wondered what that guy looked like or that woman looked like behind the microphone. Well, they did their job. They sounded tall in some way if you enjoyed listening to those people. So the reason why audio optometry, the term started for me was when I was in college, I was a biology major, and I had to take a calculus class, and I just did not want to do any more math in my life. And I'd say about four-thirds into the first class, they decided that, no, you're really not into this, are you? So I walked away from, and I was going to be an optometrist. And I accidentally walked down at the college campus looking for my car in the garage. I took the wrong elevator and I walked through the media center, which was the television station and the radio station. And I was always intrigued by radio. So I walked in there and these people were so nice. They were so ingratiating. They were so friendly. I wanted to check it out longer.
Represent.
And I stayed there for till I graduated. The UMass Boston WUMB, which were tough call letters to say, but WUMB, which is now 91.9 FM. It was a small station. I just fell in love with audio. Honestly, years later, I worked at WBZ Radio, which was together with WBZ Television. We knew everyone. It was everyone in TV and radio all
intermingled. It's a nomadic and a very incestuous industry.
Very much so. Everyone knows everyone. But a lot of people would come into my studio all the time and say, you know, I've been told that I have a good voice and I should do voiceover work. I'd say, sure, yeah, maybe go for it. It's not as easy as you think. And they figure, well, radio's easier than television. I would say, why? What do you mean? Well, it's only half. I mean, with television, you have the visual. And with radio, it's only half of that, which is just the audio. And that's when I said to them, do you know how to sound tall? I said, what do you mean by that? I said, when you understand what that means, you could do so much more with sound than you can with visual. This is why, think about you've read a great book and then you've seen the movie. The movie will never come to the level of that book. Because why?
Well, there's so much more that's internal in the book that you just can't see in a movie. I mean, you can't get into someone's head. I always feel that video really enhances audio because the work is done for you. So whoever's speaking is just referencing what you're seeing. And so I think that audio with video is a little bit more forgiving. But if it's audio only, now you have to make a connection using your voice, you know, using your emotion as your entire body to get that message across.
But there's one thing that's more powerful than voice, that's more powerful than music, more powerful than sound effects. And that's the writing, the copy, words. It's not how you say it, it's what you're saying is really the key to a good message, to a good radio show, to a good television show, anything. It's all about the script, your copy. What are you going to say in your statement?
I want to skip over to something now. You're a comedy guy, and the data research firm Kantar looked at 10,000 ads to see what makes an ad effective. Do you know the answer?
Humor.
Absolutely. So during COVID, brands shifted from humor to a more somber tone. And I think we saw and listened to those ads, which became cloying and almost, I don't know, disingenuous in some ways. So I think advertisers thought that this more somber tone would elevate their brand a little bit and would highlight the purpose of that brand. And Kantar called it, you will like this, sadvertising. because, because it was all purpose driven. But they added that purpose does not have to be sad and it doesn't have to be dry. So can you speak to that and how we can use humor in advertising more often and walk that fine line between, I think people don't want it to offend or silly. Sometimes people try to be clever and it just misses the mark. They're trying to be funny, but...
Well, this happens. Well, first of all, the reason why it would be number one is because humor is disarming. Telling a joke or making someone laugh, it's a great feeling. It beats... making them cry. You making people happy, and there's nothing like having a good laugh. Every day we should laugh. So when we hear something that's funny, it's contagious. What's so funny? Tell me. I want to hear that joke. I've had so many clients who come up and say, I want to do a funny ad. Okay, well, you are a funeral home, so we have to kind of work around this one. First of all, there are a million ways to sell a product, to sell a service. And humor, again, it's disarming. But unless it's done by a professional, very, 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 very few advertisers, business owners understand they could be the funniest people in the world. They could even be stand-up comedians and work great on a stage. But there are a lot of ingredients here. First, there's telling a joke. Second, there's telling a funny ad. This is different. There are plenty of ads that are very funny. But do you remember what the product was? Isn't that the whole purpose of this? Oh, I saw this great funny ad. What was it for? I don't remember. Money wasted.
Absolutely.
And stand-up comedians are on stage, they tell a joke, and they get no laughter out of it. They know immediately that it bombed. What about a funny advertisement that doesn't hit the mark? You're not going to know about this for months. You might not know at all. And here's another element. What is funny to some people is not funny to others. This is why if you're going to do a humorous ad, you must hire someone who knows how to write a humorous ad.
You know, first of all, comedy is hard.
Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
And sometimes, especially if you set out to be funny, it's almost overthinking it. So you can't get the spontaneity that humor often brings to whatever it is, whether it's an ad or a book or a movie. Also, I worked with this account executive and he had this plaque on his desk and it always stuck with me. It's not creative if it doesn't sell.
Exactly.
So if I can't remember who you are and you have the most hilarious ad in, you know, everybody's failed at their job. Good try, but you really missed the mark. Mm-hmm. Comedy is hard. You know, also as a writer, there's this philosophical discussion about if you set out to write something beautiful, it will never be. So sometimes it's good to have an intention, but often forcing that intention on art isn't very helpful. It doesn't really produce great art. And sometimes you just have to let it percolate for a while and let it be what it is.
Exactly.
Since we're talking about humor, how much humor finds its way into what you write?
Personally, I love doing comedic ads. I do, because I'm also a comedian. But I know that the humor has to align with the product I am selling. Otherwise, it'll easily get lost. But now, in these times, I have to throw in this caveat. What is hysterically funny to one person could now, and I throw in that, and everyone is waiting for this to come in, the politically correct element is, what do you mean by that? Or, I find that offensive. Everyone's on edge now. So this is another reason why to say if you're going to do your humor, you have to stay within. And I'm not saying the practices of the FCC guidelines. I'm talking about it's the same thing if you're going to do a comedy show in front of a group of contrarians or people who have an axe to grind against society and just are not willing to laugh. That's what an advertising audience is. I wasn't prepared to laugh here. You have not only an unsuspecting audience, you have an audience that's in their cars or they're upset that you're interrupting their story on television. So now you're an annoying factor. Think about once again, if you're the guy on the street, how are you going to ingratiate these people? And there are many levels of humor. There's sophisticated humor. Then there's what I call beer humor. You know, the ones you see during the Super Bowl with, you know, Could be the guy getting hit in the crotch type of humor, you know, the slapstick type. Levels on that. My answer to all of this is leave it to the professionals to have them do it. If you have an idea, fine, then work it in with your media people. But if you just want to go on and be funny, then my advice to you is to say then go to a local comedy club on amateur night and do 10 minutes of stand-up.
Right. So it's walking that line all the time between sensitivity, knowing that there are people that you might offend. And I would argue that some of the purpose of humor is to offend so people will think. I think that there's something very revolutionary about getting up there and saying something that does shock. I long for the days, not of being politically incorrect or hurting somebody. I think if somebody's crying because of your comedy, that's probably not a good sign. But I...
No, that wouldn't be good. That's not the idea you want to go to a comedy
show. Exactly. But humor really does help us deal with some of the, you know, heavier, weightier subjects in life. And I do long for the days of bringing comedy back into, or humor back into the marketplace. There was a... Bill Maher had a great, you know, new rules, and I don't always agree with Bill Maher, but he was talking about all the movies that were nominated for Academy Awards, and he said there is not one light movie. And I was looking at it, and I've seen most of them and loved all those movies, but they were incredibly heavy and, I would say, humor-free.
I think the last last 10 years, especially in American culture, has... Well, look what's transpired in the last 4 years alone. You have a lot of, and I'm not going to get into politics. I can't. But you could see why people are angry. Just turn on the news every night.
Right.
Is this good or bad? There's a reason to be angry now. There was a lot of anger back in the 60s, but comedy was still present. But there were a lot of people, and I'm talking about women's groups, African-American groups, Asian groups, Hispanic groups, that really didn't have their say. They were cast into a certain corner of society, and most humor was really relegated to white males, and now it's not. And that society growing, which is great, and it will always be there. Comedy will always be there. We have to look for it and have an open mind to it. As far as doing a comedic ad is concerned, I would say a formula for that comes down to this: problem plus humor plus solution equals ha 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 ha, let's go buy that product.
Well, from your mouth, right, to the sponsor's ears.
There are ways to do it, and it's fun. I mean, you and I have done some comedic ads together, I know. I know we did one for a garage door company.
I know. If you can make garage doors funny, there's pretty much hope for everything else. So, Michael, I hope that we continue this conversation, because I know that there are many aspects that we can cover, and good communication is so important. And I think early on you said it's conversation. And so let's continue this one, and I just want to thank you for being here. It's Michael Coleman, and his book is The Advantage. And you're going to have to say the rest of the title, Michael, because I botched it last time.
It's The Advantage, Creating a Better Message in a Mess
Age. And it's a great communications guidebook for business owners. If people wanted to reach you, Michael, maybe what's your studio name?
It is Colecuts, colecuts.com.
All right. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Liz.
We'll talk again.
Looking forward
Thanks.
To it.
If you enjoyed what you heard today and are curious to listen to a little bit more, you can check us out at embarkthepodcast.com or wherever you get your podcast. If there's some ground that we haven't covered and you'd like to hear us talk about it, get in touch at liz@embarkthepodcast.com. Next week, we talk to Evelyn Starr, who works with brands who are stuck in adolescence, and if you remember your adolescence at all, not a pretty place to be. In any case, we'll hear more from Evelyn and see you next week. In the meantime, thanks for listening.